Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
For Hit Boy, it's all in a name. Niggas in Paris by Jay-Z and Kanye West, Sicko Mode by Travis Scott, Thick by Beyonce from her newest album Renaissance, as well as songs from Frank Ocean, Rihanna, Kendrick Lamar, and so many more. Hit Boy's production has powered some of the biggest hits off the best projects over the last decade. Which makes it all the more remarkable that his actual crowning achievement has nothing at all to do with radio hits or the latest artists. But the thing that ensures Hit Boy's enshrinement in whatever Hall of Fame exists 20, 30 years from now is dropping back-to-back-to-back masterpieces with one of rap's most legendary figures, Nas. Nas just won his first Grammy a few years back from his album King's Disease, a project that was fully produced by Hit Boy. Since then, they've gone on to release together KD2, Magic, and KD3, each album better than the last. And as if all of that in the span of a few years wasn't enough, Hit Boy's also just released a new solo album as a producer-rapper called Surf or Drown. I talked to Hit Boy on today's Broken Record about his new solo project, how he's recently just introduced a new but old piece of equipment into his beat-making process, about growing up in the IE just east of Los Angeles, and what he learned from having an uncle in Troop, one of the smoothest R&B groups of the 80s and 90s. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's my conversation with Hit Boy.
How you doing today, man?
Solid, man.
Yeah?
Yep. Just on the move as usual.
Yeah, you're busy.
It's nonstop.
How you keeping up, man?
I don't even know. Between being a dad and doing this, it's just like you gotta just go push yourself, man. Don't get burnt out like some. I mean, you know, just like, just go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you're in a creative zenith, like at the top of your creative game at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. I'm taking it there. I'm definitely like, it's just like I always wanted to be able to just tap in and make pretty much any style of beat that I wanted to at any given moment. And that's like where I'm at now. Like I could just, somebody need a certain sound or if I'm hearing something, I could really like execute it a lot more than earlier in my career. So that's exciting.
But that was a goal early in the career still.
Yeah, just like, you know, I would get to a certain point on my production and then kind of get just stomped on what to do next. But now it's like I made so many beats, so many songs, it's just coming to me.
Can you think of something recently where before you might have gotten stumped, but you were able to move it forward?
Just beats in general, you know what I mean? Yeah. Not, I can't think of a specific thing, but now, and now I also understand that you can build things over time. They, like, before, like, I used to overcrowd my beats, and artists used to tell me, like, man, the beats, they dope, but at the same time, I don't know where I could fit in because there's so much instrumentation and a lot going on, so I just scaled it back, and now it's like, okay, I can get a voice on there, then I can get inspired again and add another sound and a breakdown and just something that makes sense.
Add the right sound.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the idea that your beats were maybe crowded for certain people before, do you think that maybe goes back to just when you were just making beats just for yourself? Like,
yeah, for sure. Definite, you know. I mean, I always made beats with the intention of getting somebody on them, even if it was just myself, because I was writing before I
even
made
Even when you were learning to make beats?
Yeah, because I was making songs before I was making beats. So right. I was like trying to find something that made sense for me or whoever else to get on, you know? But I would...
So you were sort of making beats for you to get on?
Yes.
You're tired of just rapping over instrumentals from other people or something?
Well, I was in a group with a kid and he made all the beats at first. So we did like a few projects together. I'm like 14, 15 years old, you know what I mean? So by the time I turned 16, we had made a couple projects and I just started playing with the FL Studio at his crib and was like, yo, this is really like fun. It's like a video game for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I just took a real liking to it and kept pushing with it.
Did you do anything musically growing up, playing instruments or?
Nah, but I was around a lot of music. Yeah, my uncle Rodney B was in a group called Troop and I just saw the whole lifestyle, you know what I mean? Them being in the studio, video shoots, the style, like the music, the dance moves, like it just.
Wait, yeah, Troop, the
R&B group.
R&B group?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my uncle and my grandma started the group. She was managing them up until they got signed and like she really whipped them into shape to like really like be focused on that level.
That's crazy.
She just always had a passion for music herself. And when my uncle started getting to a certain age, she just was like, you need to start a group. And they started a group and they really went and had a couple number ones and had some success.
What was that like for you growing up seeing that?
Crazy. It got me like on the focus level I'm on now, you know what I mean? Like I always just seen like they was doing it on a real level. So I seen it. I seen the everything, the whole lifestyle, and I just was intrigued.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For you at that time, was hip hop the thing where you were locked in on hip hop? Or did you see that and maybe even think like?
Yeah, I mean, well, my uncle played all type of music. So I heard N.W.A., I heard Snoop, I heard Ice Cube, I heard just like all the West Coast, you know, hip hop. But it was a lot of R&B being played too because it was an R&B group. So just like hearing them chord changes and just like really seeing the musicality in it, that's kind of like what was hitting me. But I didn't know exactly what it was, but it was the emotion of the chords and the emotion of the drum patterns and the groove and the feeling that just was like I was downloading into my DNA and downloading that DNA.
And so now that you're making music, you started to realize the things that you're attracted to and making music somewhat come from that.
Changes, for sure. I mean, me being able to do a Music Soul Child album, we just dropped Victims and Villains, that's literally because my uncle used to play his first album over and over and over. So I just like already knew kind of where to take it, what I would want to hear personally with just updating it to where it's at now.
Yeah.
But so a lot of time when I'm making music, I just like tap into that original emotion that I would feel before I knew what it was.
What was your first meeting with music like?
It was dope because he already had reached out telling me he loved what I was doing with Nas, so he just showed.
So what like what Nas project had come out at that point when he reached out?
Magic. Okay. It was all KD1, KD2, and Magic had come out, not KD3 yet. Matter of fact, no, Magic hadn't even come out. Magic was about to come out. And because I remember playing him some of the music and he was just like, yo, this is crazy. Nobody even knew he was doing it, but when he pulled up, it just was respect, you know?
Yeah.
And I just had so many beats that fit into where he wanted to go. It kind of was like an easy process.
But the intention wasn't necessarily to do a full record together? Or was
it? He just was like, we need to tap in and, you know, work, see what happened. And after a while, you start getting 8, 9, 10 songs. It's like, nah, this got to be the album.
But that's probably happened before, right?
No, I mean, with Nas, I didn't plan on making four albums with him. I didn't even know I was going to make one album with him. He just was coming to get some beats, and we just kept working. You know what I mean? He just kept pulling up. It's something about the spot I'm in and just the zone I'm in personally that makes artists want to keep coming back for the most part.
The physical spot or really just?
The physical spot.
Where are you working?
Chalice Studios, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where is that
it's
at?
It's West Hollywood, not far from here. Okay. Like 5 minutes.
And you just lock it out? And
yeah, I've been there going on 5 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, this August it'll be 5 years I've been in that studio, and I've just been making a lot of progress. It's kind of like a homie type of situation. Like, it kind of reminds me of me making beats in my bedroom at my mom crib, and I feel like that's what is attractive about it. Like, it's not like some it's my 3-year-old C3. It just makes it real comfortable to come record.
Yeah.
Versus like this big room that's got the lights all on and it's all sterile. It's like, nah, you coming in, it's like, man, it's like almost like being at somebody's crib.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's taking it back.
Yeah, for sure.
So Surfer Drown. First of all, what's the title?
Surfer Drown. I mean, I had went through some heavy stuff just in the game, you know what I mean? Just in life, you know, we all gotta figure out whether we're gonna surf or drown, but just especially the music industry. I feel like I've been to the mountaintop. I've been around the amazing artists and, like, you know, getting that respect, and then the flip side, you know, trying to figure it out. I, like, you know, I could have literally drowned and just like either quit music, or like I've been in situations to where some people wouldn't even wanted to be alive no more, you know what I mean? Just like kind of feeling like you lost it all, and not getting the respect, not getting the replies from people, not getting the same, you know, energy you was. And I really like pulled myself up out of that, you know what I mean? I used to have 100 people around me, then it flipped to having nobody around. The day that I found out I had like $0 in my account, which was like 6 years ago, after having millions, nobody was there. Nobody was around, you know what I mean? And it just was like, wow. When you get into it, they gonna be there. When you not, they not gonna be there. So it's like, you gotta look inside yourself. And that's where the whole Surf or Drown concept came from. Like, and Surf Club is that's my label, that's my clique. That's since I was 17 years old, been pushing Surf Club, and that's just kind of a play on that too.
Yeah, how did you get Surf Club out of, were you in Fontana when that?
I was in Fontana, yeah. It was, it's crazy, because I was at the Ontario Mills with the homie Chili Chill, with B Care and a couple other people. This is like 2005. Went to the Hollister store at Ontario Mills at the mall. We all bought like these kind of like matching similar sweaters, and mine said Surf Club on it, and we all kind of collectively was like, yo, that should be the clique name, Surf Club. It just sounded hard, so we just ran with it from there. And you know, it's like, we've always gotten respect as far as that name goes, man. Like, you could hear like Drake shouting it out on multiple songs, and just people that like really they understand like the legacy of it, that if you really tapped in on it.
Tap into your vibe, but even hearing Nas shout out like the IE as often
too
as he
hard.
Does, it's
too
like,
hard.
What?
Too dude? Hard, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's fire.
It's crazy.
Yeah. People hit me at me on IG and be like, yo, Hit, I love this IE weather. And I'm like, that's crazy how Nas put that in the spectrum. Somebody from Queens, New York, Queensbridge, it's like, you just never know how it's gonna come together, man.
It's insane, man.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like quitting? Like that point when you're at $0?
That and before that, and so many times, man, just like dealing with the game and getting to know yourself, knowing how this works, like knowing who you got around you. Like, yeah, it all can be like emotionally like heavy. But I love music so much.
Well, what's the part of it that's like the unintended stuff? The stuff, I mean, like you're in it for the music,
But it's like, so I signed a publishing deal when I was 1 year out of high school with, you know, by this time, you know, my uncle was popping late 80s, early 90s. This is 2006, 2007. He can't really give me the guidance. I don't really have
Game's
that many
different.
People that I can, yeah. You know, get. So, like, I signed a deal that I'm still in to this day right now. So I'm just talking about I'm 35, about to be 36 next month. And I've been in the deal since I was 19. So that alone has been, like, a mental thing. It's been just, like, you know, I got to see so many people like who didn't sign, you know, crazy deal come up after me and be kind of like looked at in a different light, revered in a different light, when it's like I actually got the discography, just the way things been structured. Like, you know, I'm still waiting to get out that deal and even just like live on the level that I should be living on. You know what I mean? Which I'm living great. I'm living beautiful. I'm blessed, all that. But there's more. Like I see, you know, what it's going to be and what it can be.
How much longer does that deal run?
I mean, it's supposed to be an earn-out deal now, which just got renegotiated. And
when you say earn-out,
so versus like me having to have a, like I had an MDRC deal, which is like, you know, it's percentages, and once you add up, they find some other way to make it not really count as what it's supposed to be in black and white, and that's just all contractual, just, you know, wordage and stuff like that. But yeah, now it's like, I mean, I should have hopefully 2 years in this deal left, you know.
And it's a publishing deal?
Publishing deal, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, that's just like a part of what can weigh you down at times when you're talking to lawyers and they like, yo, this is the worst contract I ever seen. That's not something as a creative you want to hear, especially when you did that deal so premature, so young, so just new to everything going on. Like, I didn't expect me to still be in a deal that I signed from then, you know? Yeah. And it's like, I didn't even find out that it was a bad deal until I made a hit, which was, I got signed 07. I didn't make a real, real hit, top radio hit until like 2011.
Niggas in Paris?
Yeah, exactly. I found out after Niggas in Paris dropped when I was like, okay, so where's the real, real money? And they like, oh, well, you signed to this contract, so, you know, it's not going to be the way you thought it was going to be.
So who was getting the money?
I mean, it's just like, not that I'm not getting the money from that song. It's just more so like, you know how some people will make a hit and it's like going viral or whatever the case, they'll go be able to negotiate a new deal or something, get $5-10 million or something like that. But I've never been able to do that with, you know, even after making hits that should have allowed
you
me to.
You can't leverage that hit to then go in.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Given you've been locked into something that's felt so, I mean, beyond restrictive, it's felt.
Yeah, even just talking about this right now, though, like, that brought me to this place because, you know, you get to a point where you want to do this. You want to just like get the singles and you want to like have every song just be Niggas in Paris, perform it 10, 12 times. Like, it's not going to all be that. So I got to this point where it's like, I got to find out how to get my respect in another way, which was like, it's a blessing to work with Nas. And
was that intentional or do you think that just happened?
It was a mixture of both, you know what I mean? Yeah. Me just like trying to figure it out and then understanding like, okay, if I somebody like a Benny the Butcher, Big Sean, Nas, Music, Soulchild, one of them come through, I gotta lock in on a different level. I can't let them leave. I gotta like have so much heat that it's like, nah, bro, I'm rocking with you.
Yeah.
It just took me to that level.
Did anyone guide you to that thinking? Or like, did you kind of have to get there
watching
on your own?
Watching the game, seeing it was more so just watching.
Do you feel like early on you had mentors in the production game?
Yeah, of course. Like, I got signed to Polo the Don, and he was doing big pop records and doing big R&B songs and rap songs, too. And I got to see the game at a high level. And even if he, like, didn't directly tell me exactly ABC what to do, I watched it. I watched him. I watched his ups and his downs. Just, like, even learning from my interaction with people, you got to just, like, treat everybody decently, because you don't know who's gonna become who.
Who's gonna,
you
know, who? What, yeah, I mean? Like, assistants become.
Listen, I knew so many people: Drake, Frank Ocean, Tyler the Creator, Kendrick Lamar. I like knew these people before they blew up. So it's like, you just gotta like, you gotta understand that anybody, it could turn up for them. So
did you have good relationships with them?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, cool. For sure. Yeah, but just in general, you know, just like learning, and that got me to this place where it's like, I feel like I get more respect for doing these albums than doing a big giant single. People look at me different now. People understand like, oh, he's not one of those. You know what I mean? He like serious.
It's really hard to get people to concentrate on a project, like a full project, man.
Yeah.
And to have multiple now, like the two out this year.
Right.
The Nas, I mean, like, just to have so now like a whole body of just like actual projects. It's not just like Niggas in Paris or Click, which are great records, but like to actually now have like this, it puts you in my mind, in a different stature of producer, you know?
1,000,000%, man. It just makes people respect what you do more, I feel like, man. Cause like, I've had big radio songs and didn't get nowhere near this revered, respected, honored, you know what I mean? Like, and that's like, it's just a mental thing too. Like, you can't really get caught up in thinking that the name or the massive success of something is going to really lock people into what exactly who you are and what your brand is. You got to just make them waves and make them plays that make them respect it on a different level. It's not always going to be the, like, I put out a song with a big name artist this year, and then I put out a song with Alchemist, and the song with Alchemist, who is a less, you know, lesser known name than this guy, blew that shit out the water. So it's like, you know, you just, you know, you can't get caught up in just none of the industry tactics and thinking that, oh, it's going to be this way. Oh, this going to be successful.
If you link with this person just because they're
exactly.
hot.
This song going to be successful just because, you know, it's, it don't work like that.
You can't game it like that. Mm-mm. How much have you, going from, like, you know, you had a high school, you signed like a deal that you're still locked into, bad mm-hmm. deal, mm-hmm. to now being around Nas, like, have you picked up on some of his, the way he thinks his team too?
Yeah, for sure. I pick up on just like how to be a solid person. You know what I mean? He ain't never the loudest in the room. He ain't never got to make himself seem like something. Like, he just is who he is. So it's like, I'm already personally that type of person too. But I learned even more, like, bro, just be humble. Do what you do. You're going to get the respect you deserve when you work for it. You know what I mean? So I just learned just like on some life shit being around him. And obviously business too. Like, he doing his thing. And it's just like, you have no choice if you really there and being attentive and you want to learn, you're going to pick up on it.
Yeah, man.
We have to pause for a quick break. When we're back, you'll hear all about Hit-Boy's beat-making philosophy.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
We're back with more of my conversation with Hit-Boy.
When you started making beats on FL Studio, which you still use, right?
I do, yeah.
That's why.
Just implemented MPC Live into, I still use FL. I just record what I'm doing on Live into FL. And that's like been making my process even easier with making beats. Cause it's funny because FL is like, a lot of people that use it know that like sometimes you have latency problems. So I really have been working with latency for 10, 12 years. Like,
you've been working with that lag for that. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like I'm kind of like better than I even think I am, because now that I'm on APC and I'm feeling stuff in real time, I'm just like, oh man, it's just so much easier.
But how did you account for the latency, for the lag all those years?
I just did it so much that it just kind of became regular to me, normal to me.
Did it impact your sound, you think?
Who knows? Just put me in a zone where it's like, you know, I'm really working on this beat. Like, I'm putting work into this beat, you know what I mean?
When did you decide to start incorporating the MPC?
This is like 4 months ago. Yeah, it's like recently. I got the Supreme MPC Live. Nas actually bought it for me, and I was just one day like, man, I need to crack this open. Matter of fact, no, my homeboy James Fauntleroy, writer extraordinaire, legendary artist, all that, he came by and played me some beats that he had made on NPC Live, and he was like, bro, you got to get on this. And then that's when I cracked it open, maybe a week later or a few days later, and I'm like, yo, this is fun. It makes the process way more even fun, you know what I mean? I already have fun while I'm making beats, but that's like, make it almost like a cheat code.
Did Nas give it to you for you to make beats on, or was it sort of just like, hey,
here? I was just like, it's a dope piece. Like, even if I never opened it, like, I probably could have sold it for however much, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I'm like, nah, I gotta get it in, so.
Like, have you made anything yet with NPC that you feel like is going to make it to a project?
Yeah. Yeah? For sure.
Already?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't play. Like, I look at myself like a department store, like a... just like a store for real. Like, when you come through, you're gonna find something, whether it's the jacket, the shirt, maybe the whole outfit, the shoes, something. You're gonna find something that works for what you're doing. 9 times out of 10, I just like kind of like, let me just keep cranking out product. And it's like the latest stuff I do, I make sure I play it for the artist that's coming to work with me, and it just kind of always connects somehow.
Are the artists that you ever make something for where you feel like you seek them out to show them something specific? Like, you feel like this could really work for this person?
Yeah, I mean, especially more early in my career. Like now, I mean, well, if I know I'm not locked in with Nas, I'm going to get in that zone. Like after we do 3-4 records, like it's like, okay, some switches in my brain where it's like I know where to take it for the rest of the time to keep it in this linear thing but still be dynamic.
So you still locked in with Nas?
I'm super locked in. We was in the studio last night. Probably gonna be in the studio after we done with this podcast, man. It's just like, it's honestly, I feel like we still working on the first album. Like, it's just been like a progressive thing. Like, I've seen people work on albums for 5-6 years. And if we was just now about to come out the album, people would just like be even more mind blown because the progress. But it was good that we, you know, have been just making the projects, dropping them. We getting this live feedback. We getting all this support, all this respect. He's up my respect level just in music in general. And people look at him as like, you know, like, wow, you can age gracefully and you could still keep it hip hop. You could still keep it fresh, still cutting edge, modern at, you know what I'm saying, whatever age. And it's not even about that.
What you guys are doing is timeless, dude. It's crazy.
Appreciate that, man.
It's crazy. I gotta say, like, I think Jay-Z did that similar thing with 444. Mm-hmm. Made it feel like you don't have to be the newest mm-hmm. the artist to make something that feels resonates fresh, or impacts and vibrates. Mm-hmm. But you guys did it KD2, Magic, yeah, KD3, yeah. And have every project be flawless. It really the point that. Where it's like those are just so next level, crazy. Incredible. Like, how do you even choose one? That's like, it's like having 3 Illmatics, you know?
Crazy, man. Yeah, I just seen somebody on Twitter say something about the first KD, and I'm like, damn, we had some joints on there. It was like a different... And I feel like we every song we make is like a real song with some type of structure, some type of, you know, it might be a new way of thinking about it, but it's just like something that's gluing it together as an actual song, you know what I mean? And I feel like we've progressed into like really him just digging into that bag of just getting raps off, but still keeping a structure to where people can enjoy the song. And it's not just 3 minutes of rapping, like you still got a hook, but he just like, just flashed back like and took it to a place that of what people really want to hear from him.
How are the concepts coming up? Like, I'm thinking off this newest one, like Michael and Quincy, like that as just a concept.
Yeah. He actually had that idea for a little minute, like for probably like some months, and he would just talk about it. I didn't know exactly what, because I feel like most people would have just sampled either some off Thriller or Off the Wall, or just something that like, kind of like was a similar aesthetic to those. But we took it left field and had like the break beat with the dirty acoustic bass and then the horns and chord changes and just like, you know, really having fun with it.
So we had the concept for a minute, but there wasn't a beat attached to it or
Yeah, because I was thinking about how to approach it. Like, I never want to be surface level and just be like, okay, cool, I'm going to go sample a Quincy song or sample a Michael song. Would have been the easy
thing to do, just sample Body Heat or something, right?
Yeah, nah, it's like, just come with a new wave.
Damn.
Yeah.
Did you grow up a Nas fan? Like, growing up on the West Coast, yeah. I grew up on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Nas was respected. I respected Nas always.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the thing that I was always hearing coming up.
Right.
You know?
Man, that's funny because I just was having this conversation with somebody just about how, like, things are marketed in the way people look at things, you know what I mean? I always had a super major respect for Nas, but working with him and digging into his discography, listening to how the albums was sequenced, like, I listened to all his intros, like, just back to back to back to back, just trying to capture that energy, and I really got more of a appreciation for who he really is and what he's contributed to music in general, you know what I mean? So I always had major respect for him, but I just like grew to really understand like, oh, this dude is, you know what I mean? Because I was on the West Coast, so it wasn't as much other than the hits. If I Were With the World and stuff like that would play on the radio
all the time,
you know what I mean? But I didn't, like, you know, my family super West Coast, so they didn't just have his albums on repeat. But I did have friends who, you know, if I was the Jay-Z guy, I got a homeboy who was the Nas guy, and we've back and forth, take over Ether, whatever, yeah. You know what I mean?
But that's like, I don't know, like, probably sounds like for you too. For me, that, like, both of them didn't enter my world as, like, beloved artists until, like, that that beef time, like, Ether and yeah, Takeover, right. et cetera. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, like, Illmatic, when you talk to anyone from New York, that's just, like, hands down, easily. But it's, like, for me, it's, like, I mean,
94, Death Row was going insane out here, so it was no really...
Doggy style, like, my, like, you know, like...
swallowing that up.
Yeah.
You know? But I get it now, though. I get it, and his longevity is just speaks to, you know, what he's always been. Like, he's been doing this since he was 16, 17.
Yeah.
For him to be 49 is just, like, still rapping at a high level, projecting his voice at the highest level. It's
his,
like,
voice sounds, I think, the best it's ever sounded.
Crazy.
So when you guys are in sessions, will you guys discuss his approach on a song, like the way he's attacking a song, a beat, or his kick?
Yeah, I mean, it's both ways. Sometimes I'll come in and, you know, I might be like, yo, you should start rapping at this bar. Like, it might not be the one, or it might be just like a off place, and then I just let him just take it from there, and he usually spark another idea for me. Like sometimes with the hooks, he'll record something and I'll just take the last word of what he said or last line of what he said, fly it back and kind of just structure a hook and then let him finish it out. And it just makes it easy. Wherever he going, I'm going, and we just making it work.
So you'll structure a hook out of something that he maybe intended as a verse.
Exactly.
I heard stories about Dre doing that for like Snoop back on like the Chronic and Doggy Style. Like Snoop would just freestyle something and be like, but it intended it like that's the verse, but it'd be like.
Mm-hmm. It's about that pocket, the way it's hitting the pocket. You just like, as a producer or whoever, if you're a songmaker, you will just hear certain things that maybe the artist not paying attention to. And it's like, I'm trying to take advantage of all this shit. This is not.
You feel like that's your job to like hear what
and
they're not.
He open to it. He open to my ideas. So, and that's where I'm empowered. Just like him being able to see my vision. When I play a beat, the beat might not even be all the way done, but if I'm excited about something and I got a chord structure or some drums and put it together, and like he down to write to it, he down to rap on it.
So just that baseline, like unfinished kernel of an idea.
Mm-hmm. That's it, because most, you know, especially now in the new age, they, if it don't sound like the top of Rap Caviar or the number one song, some like artists won't even pay attention to it. They don't want to build and really like make a song. A lot of artists.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a real vulnerable place for you to be as a producer.
In my career, like I sit there and just go through as many beats as it took. But now it's like, man, if we got to go past maybe 5 beats, we probably, you should just go find another producer and we'll we'll reconvene, just come pull back up on me and we'll lock in when it's time, you know? Because I feel like if I'm going to have an artist come in, I'm going to play them something that I can hear them on. And if we not on the same wavelength, then that just is what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Rihanna joint you did on Anti, that was one that it took a while, right?
Well, I did two on Anti, Pose and the song Woo. And that was a build. That was a process. I had the basis of it, though, when we sat down. I was in a room with Travis Scott, The Weeknd, Ty Dolla $ign, and The Dream. And I just had my contact sort of NPC, and I was just playing with them guitar stabs and just came up with that pattern, and everybody in the room just went crazy, started humming melodies and writing to it, and it just got built out progressively.
That's got to be a hell of a feeling to have that room start vibing off what you're playing. Crazy.
Yeah. I just remember like Weeknd singing melodies, Travis coming up with his wave, and it came together.
But it was a Rihanna session, so you knew whatever would end up for that project.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. It's a couple of songs from the last few Nas records I want to talk about. Just having Premiere cut on Wave Gods.
That was ill. That's because it was like a collective thing. Like, when Rocky came through to do his verse, he was like, yo, we should get Premiere to scratch on this. And it was like, yo, me and Nas was low-key already kind of thinking like that, so it just made sense.
Who hit Premiere?
That had to be Nas. Just tapped in with him, and he did it off the love, you know what I mean? Just went in and made it sound like authentic Premiere vibes.
Did you have any notes on it?
Nah, I didn't. It was solid.
One take.
Mm-hmm.
So you do EPMD. How did the EPMD concept for the Ryan Coogler film?
Mm-hmm. Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, and the Black Messiah. How did that concept come up for that?
I just had the beat. And Nas walked in the studio, I was playing it loud, and he just started coming up with flows and then set the EPMD line and just went from there. We just built it out. And it was for Kent King's Disease 2. Like, that was supposed to be a record on there. It ended up being a remix on King's Disease 2, but the original was just, it was supposed to be for the album, and I was involved in Judas and the Black Messiah kind of like heavily on the executive production side. So I actually put a record of my own with me rapping on there called Broad Day. They was just like, yo, we need more records. I just started submitting joints, and EPMD, they was like, this is perfect. And they ended up, you know, doing the video and all that.
That's amazing. But so then when did you guys decide you want to still keep it for the record?
We just love the joint. And Nas, I guess, was, I forgot how the Eminem thing came about, but he just was like, man, we should throw Eminem on it. Reached out to him. He did the joint quick, you know what I mean? Hopped on it. EPMD didn't even know that Eminem was on it until it like was about to drop, you know what I mean? So that was an ill moment, just like it all coming together and everybody from their own era just getting their respect.
That's one of those records, man, where it's like, again, that's why these projects are so incredible, man. Like, just getting Premiere on that Magic joint. But when you have
Warren Hill on KD2.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's some like, okay, as a producer, you just like don't, first of all, she don't even like rap like that much no more.
She doesn't do music much.
So it's like, for me to like have a Premiere Lauryn Hill rap verse on one of my beats, that's just ill.
Yeah, when was the last time you heard a Lauryn Hill verse?
Mm-hmm.
Like a new Lauryn Hill.
She went in for bars. Like, she has like two verses put into one.
How did that come up?
They just cool, Nas and Lauryn Hill. So through them talking, I guess they wanted to do a joint. And when we made the song, Nas was like, this the one we got to put Lauryn on. And
yeah, did he have his verse already?
Yeah, he did. He had his verse and sent it over. And she literally did it within days. Like,
Did you think it was really going to happen?
I didn't personally, but it just like came together, man. It was ill.
Again, even the resisting the temptation to do the obvious, which would be to do like if I Ruled the World,
mm-hmm,
too, you know?
That concept was dope for her too, because she do be on her, you know, nobody, just like out the way type vibe as far as I can see. And it just brought the concept all the way home.
She recorded it?
She recorded it in her own space, but sent the vocals in, and yeah, it was just a moment.
What about Death Row East?
Death Row East, that was the first song we did for KD2, man. That set the tone. Like, that concept is powerful. It's a moment that a lot of people, a lot of internet talk, a lot of podcasts, people telling their recollection of what happened at Bryant Park between Nas and Pac and Death Row and Nas Clique. And he just gave you a straight, like, POV of what really happened.
How much was Death Row and Pac and Johnny J, and how much was that, like, all part of your consciousness?
Yeah, I downloaded that DNA from just hearing it all the time. Like, that was, like, massive on a commercial level and underground. Like, everybody rock with the Death Row stuff, like Snoop, Pac, all that. And doing that song, I just was like, man, I need to, like, tap into as much as I can as far as, like, Pac producers go. And then I just, like, already watched, like, documentaries and stuff on Johnny J, and I was like, that's the producer I need to channel the most on this song.
What made you feel that?
Because it just reminded me of a Tupac beat. Like, Death Row type of vibe, like that melodic kind of guitar stuff with the groove over it. It just, yeah, it had that energy.
It's an incredible beat, man.
Appreciate that.
Locking in with Nas for those records, you locked in with Soulchild.
Mm.
It's really rare these days. And it's funny, like, I guess it goes back to even Illmatic when, like, Nas having all those incredible producers on his first record.
Right.
Really kind of seemed to popularize, like, having a bunch of different producers on your record.
Mm.
But yeah, what you're doing now is rare, man.
Man, appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just that's the flip side of that. Now it's like he started off working with just all different bunch of different producers. Now he's been locked in with me for 3 years, and it's like, don't seem like we stopping no time soon. Like, we really having fun with it.
So where are you finding the time then? So, you know, within 13 months, it's KD2, it's Magic, it's KD3. And now you're out with your own record.
Right, Surfer Drown.
And yes, the Soulchild record, Music Soulchild record. Like, how, like, where are you finding the time, man?
I just gotta just go. Just, like, don't, not to say don't think, but just, like, really any type of energy that I can put into being in a studio and just progressing with my sound and just helping other artists, I'm on that, you know? This is what I worked for, to have artists trusting me on this level. Now that I got that, it's like, I gotta, like, really hold that up high and take advantage of this, like, these opportunities.
How natural does rhyming still come to you? Does writing and performing?
Man, it's like getting so much easier, I would say, just because I've been in a studio with people like Big Sean, like, with, you know what I'm saying? I executive produced Detroit 2 for Big Sean. Did a project called What You Expect, an EP with him. I mean, being around Benny the Butcher, I produced, you know, his album Burden of Proof in 2020. That was, like, you know, just kind of heavy on the underground. And working with Nas, man, I'm working with some top tier artists.
You just named some of the most premier, like,
so
lyricists.
Like, I'm like, you know, they watching and being fans and studying, you know, just as far as what I'm doing on the production. And I'm doing the same on the artistry end. So that's just helping me cultivate a whole just next level of myself.
Have you always been writing on the side?
Yeah, for sure. I've always been dropping projects, dropping singles, just, like, you know, that's always been my passion. But it's like the beat making aspect of it is so much fun to me that I just took a liking to it, you know what I mean? I feel like if I would have been chasing trying to be an artist all these years, who knows, you know, it could have worked out, couldn't have. But now it's like I have an ultimate cheat code. Like, I can sit in a studio and make songs all day. Soon as one of the greatest artists living, you know, leave the studio, whoever that may be, you know what I mean? I'm able to start recording my own stuff. They didn't left that energy in the studio. I watched them put bars and lines together. And, you know, it's just like, it's just helping me with my own structure.
That's incredible, man, that you're able to sit there and watch the people at the best of the best.
Yeah, and having just, like, the mind to want to, you know, look at it a different way. Like, I'm in there really trying to learn. I'm trying to get better every day. Like, I ain't wasting no time.
We're going to take one last quick break and then come back with the rest of my conversation with Hit-Boy.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs, on-demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar'snest. We're back with Hit Boy. How was it being around as a producer MC? Mm. How was it being around Ye in your good music years?
When I first moved to Atlanta, after I signed my deal with Polo, that was like my college years. And like the years with Kanye was like the, oh, I got a job that's at a high level, but I got to still learn. You know what I mean? Yeah. I still got a lot of learning to do, like understanding like this thing moves quick and you have to move fast. You got to be efficient. You got to be on top of it at all times. And that's really what that taught me. Like, you got to be putting, like, he was sleeping in the stool, like, wake up. Same clothes, start recording, start whatever, like chopping up samples. I'm just like, that's the level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, yeah, seeing, having watched that Genius documentary and just seeing some footage of Ye in the studio, almost reminds you like when you see those little clips of like Pac in the studio. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just the energy's on 100. Mm-hmm. Like, there's work to do. Like, yeah, let's do the work. Sure.
Like, he not in there playing and he ain't gonna be nice about it. He not gonna be polite talking softly. He's gonna let you know, like, you fucking up. Like do this shit the right way type shit. You know what I mean?
Did you ever catch that wrath?
The first time I sat down to make a beat with him was the song Lift Off of Watch the Throne. He had me trying some drums and some other instrumentations. This is when I don't think I had ever really got a session from nobody, and they told me to basically rework it and strip things away. Like, he kept telling me to strip these drums away, but I couldn't really understand exactly how he was saying it. So he started kind of firing up on me to where I had to really look at it. I'm like, we just met, homie, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, yeah, but that just like taught me like, nah, bro. I remember his exact words. I just kept forgetting to mute the drums or something was going on. And he was like, these drums are gonna be the death of me. Like, I just remember, I'm like, it's that serious, bro? I'm like, that's crazy, you know what I mean? But, you know, that's his passion. That's why he got 20-some Grammys or however many and is respected on that level. It's because he's not playing.
You don't seem like the kind of person to ever, like, be like that, but have you moved from that time, have you moved closer on the spectrum of, like, just sort of more relaxed to, like...
Oh, yeah, for sure. We've been super cool. I mean, we ain't in contact like that right now.
No, but I just mean, like, creatively for you, like, have you moved closer towards that, like, kind of almost perfectionist kind of vibe in the studio?
In my own way. I'm just, like, a much more chill personality than he is.
Yeah.
Even though we both Geminis, he a June Gemini. Me and Biggie got the same birthday.
Oh wow.
And but I definitely, like, you know, like, shit gotta get done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When Niggas in Paris became what it became,
yeah,
what was that feeling like for you?
It was ill because Kanye had been telling me, like, through emails, because that was the one song I didn't hear off the album. I had heard most of them songs, and I had heard, like, the song, I had did other songs that I was excited about that I'm thinking going to be on Watch the Throne. None of them made it anywhere. And Niggas in Paris was the one random beat out of maybe 60, 70 beats I had sent Kanye through email. And he somehow pulled it up when they was in Paris, and they must have been lit vibing and played it, and it just turned them up. So, yeah. But he was, I hadn't linked back with him, like, for like a month and a half, 2 months. I was out in Cali, he was in Paris and wherever. And when I went to, they had the listening party at the Observatory in New York. Crazy, like, stars on the ceiling and all that. Playing the album super loud, he brought in some crazy speakers, and I just, like, the first two songs played, got to Niggas in Paris, everybody in the Observatory stood up, DJ Khaled was next to me, and just everybody was vibing, just like, oh, this the one, going
DJ
crazy.
DJ Khaled's vibing too, that's mm-hmm. a vibe.
right, so I'm like, man, yeah, it just worked out.
Damn.
Yeah.
As a young producer at the time, that really being your first, like you called it earlier, your first real big hit, did that put pressure on you, undue pressure on you, or did it make you feel like, all right, now everything's gonna be hits, or what did it...
Man, it's all the above, you know what I mean? That's how I got to that point to where, you know, I had that surf or drown moment. That was from Niggas in Paris to that was 2011 to 2017. Just was like this all the way until it got, you know what I mean?
So you really, like, feel that way?
Yeah, I do, personally.
You still making good records and all that.
Exactly. Still making records, like, you know, Sorry even came out 2015, 16 off Lemonade. And, you know, I'm working with these people, but I'm seeing the way I'm not getting the respect. You know, I look on Twitter. I pay attention to socials. I pay attention. I'm looking at what people saying, like, where Hit Boy at? Hit Boy fell off. Hit Boy this, Hit Boy that. Mind you, it's like, I got records that's been recorded with, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce on them. Yeah. And I've, you know, got stuff with Travis Scott and all that, but it's like the Niggas in Paris situation definitely, like, just, like, was a crazy ride, because, like, I attracted, you know, different label deals and stuff like that that I was able to get a lot of money from, but didn't know what to do with it, didn't know how to move, didn't know I had to have the right infrastructure and the right, you know, just team around me and all that. And that was the learning curve. That was the, you're gonna have to give this back to the game to get it back triple, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just kind of program myself to, you know, because it's like after that, you want to chase that. And then you start to feel like, damn, this song ain't being performed 10 times. This song ain't played all day on the radio. So I fell off, or whatever the case is.
Right.
And you want to chase that feeling, but you can't do that. You got to understand that everything is going to have its space.
Right.
Like me and Nas, and granted, we haven't really pushed for this. We ain't had no giant, you know, radio record or nothing like that, but I get way more respect off of anything I ever did on radio off this Nas stuff.
All those things feel so much bigger than any, like,
crazy
radio play,
crazy.
You know?
Crazy.
Like, bigger than any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Are other rappers from Nas's era, are they looking at you in any way to thinking that they could replicate some of that magic?
I had a few people reach out, but it's like, it got to be right, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I worked on, even Game is, like, after Nas, obviously, but just, like, from that era of, like, real super hardcore rap, I did, like, 6 songs on Drillmatic for Game. Yeah, just, like, I feel like that was it's, like, he based kind of Drillmatic off Illmatic, so it's, like, definitely was inspired by bro, and that was just ill to, like, you know, have it all come full circle, because I had worked with him before in the past.
Do you want to do more R&B?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know what like playlist they'll be putting like Don Tolliver in, but I look at him as a singer, you know what I mean? I did two songs on his album, did a single on his last album as well. So, you know, I'm doing these projects, but I'm also still getting my joints off and working with different artists. Did some on the Beyonce album, even though it was like electronic, she still is like, you know, on some Queen R&B vibes.
Actually,
too.
Hey Danny, can you play Thick?
And take you back to the...
Are you in the studio with Beyonce when she's recording this?
I was in the studio to play her the beat, and I heard some early ideas, but this song was made in... the beat was made in 2014, so it went through a whole transformation. I don't even remember what the original concept. I don't even know if it was the Thick concept, but she flushed it out and turned it into a joint. And I actually got to link with her before the album came out, heard some joints, heard she played me this final version. And I was like, man, it's just like crazy that, you know, it took 8 years for this to become what it is now.
All right, man, I was just going to say, because from the time I've heard that, I was trying to imagine you.
Oh, like watching her record.
Does Jay got to be in the room? Like, how does that?
Nah, I didn't watch her record that, but I have seen her record before.
I was watching Beyonce record.
It is what you think it is. You know what I mean? Like real genius level, real thought out, getting a song and just like doing it the exact way that the person, you know, might have gave it to her as. Like she gonna flip something and move parts around and really like, she gets like a producer, writer, artist, all that.
Yeah. So if that was, so you made that 2014.
Right. I made the beat 2014 with the bridge and all that, with the chord changes I played, and yeah.
And back then, did you know it was going to be more of like a dance-oriented?
No. That was way back, because we had recorded a lot of songs back then. That was the one that saw the light of day 8 years later.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, it wasn't like definitely not no electronic or like, you know, that type of way back then.
What's incredible that you also, like, I mean, you've talked about it a couple times here, and it's actually something I didn't think about too much until I was listening to your new record, and I was listening to Slipping in the Darkness, which again, I thought was gonna be a sample of Slipping in the Darkness.
Right,
you don't go for the obvious. Mm-hmm. But I remember, I think, all right, that's gonna be that sample, put it on, but oh, it's not. And then the beat flips, this is a different beat. Later I realized it is Alchemist beat. And you, I don't know if it's on some friendly shit or like what, but you call out a couple producers.
Right.
But in a way that to me was like interesting. Like you're like, yeah, you could do this, but can you chop soul? You could do, I heard you without an 808.
I really just asked questions and said what I personally haven't heard. Like these dudes could have 100 boom bap beats in a stash that I just ain't heard, but I just made a statement saying that, you know, that's a sound I haven't heard from them. But look at Magic, look at, go to Travis Scott, go to Kanye West, you're gonna hear every sound from me, you know what I mean?
The questioning though, it was brilliant because it really made me think of, I was like, damn, like, you really can do so many different things. Like, I guess I knew it.
It was more so like, kind of like that too, like just promoting my versatility, promoting, you know, and just kind of like carving a lane out for myself. Like, y'all gotta really pay attention.
Yeah.
And that's what's been so tough for me, is like making a song like Trophies for Drake and then making something for, you know, whoever. It's just like, it's been
one
hard.
Train for ASAP.
Exactly. Like, it's hard for you to connect that just generally, you know what I mean? Just on a human level, it's just like not easy to keep up with a lot of shit. So if I'm all over the place, it's like, you know, Hit-Boy isn't the household name because of that. And that's what I feel like, you know what I mean? And now it's like getting more to that point. But I had to create a linear thing, which is now me just doing albums for people. None of the beats sound the same on the albums, but you know I did them. So yeah. It just connects with the brain a lot more.
And that's one thing that also makes, I think, you doing a full album work also, is that it doesn't necessarily sound like one producer, it doesn't sound like the same bag of tricks every song, you know, or whatever. It's like, every song sounds varied. It sounds there's a lot of movement musically throughout the records.
Having fun, man, taking advantage. And just like I said, like I always tap into my younger self, like, man, if I had this opportunity however long ago before I got on, like I would have wanted to mash out, so I need to keep that same energy.
That has got to be crazy for your younger self to be four records in with Nas,
unbelievable.
Many collaborations with Beyonce and Drake. And
y'all was on Beyonce last three albums. It's like, man, whatever she's seeing me, like, I appreciate it, because it's like she pulled me in. Like, the Beyonce album, the Lemonade album, and then the Renaissance.
And these are records that people are going to be not just listening to, but like studying for decades.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're not like fly-by-night records.
Right. Yeah, no, it's beautiful, man, for sure. Shout out to her,
man. People go back and look at Prince records and analyze every little thing, and Michael records.
My son, 3 years old, like, I get in the car, he like, play kids songs. I'm like, what you want to hear? Michael Jackson. Like, he think that's kids music. Like, but that's how good it is. It's resonating with like a kid all the way to a gangster, to a politician, to a lawyer, anybody. For the most part, you could feel Michael Jackson music. So it's like, I want to, you know, be able to contribute something to the game on that similar level. And that take a lot of work. It take a lot of locking in.
If you had like a vision for like what artistically, I mean, maybe career-wise too, but where you're at 5 years from now.
Man, just like really giving back, you know what I mean? And creating more opportunities for where music is going and for kids that's like trying to do their thing, you know what I mean? I see my homeboys, James Fauntleroy and Lawrence with 1500, they got a whole academy, they got a school. That's something that I want to, you know, lock in and be able to teach and just like really inspire the next generation. It's like the game is getting crazy. Like, I've been seeing it, I've been saying it for years, that it's getting easier and easier to make beats. And now they got the artificial intelligence. You could type in the sound, the vibe, and it'll make the beat for you. I feel like it's only going to get better. Anybody going to be able to just have music at the tip of their fingers now and just like make it sound quality somehow. So
does that make you worry?
Nah, that's just like, I need to like link with some AI people and see how I can incorporate that into what I'm doing. It's just like, that's where the world is going.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like, I don't ever like try to be anti what's going on. It's like, I want to implement it and see how I can use my personal style along with some AI shit. You know what
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the way like things have changed in production over the years,
yeah.
I mean, you kind of even say it too on Surfer Drown.
Yeah.
It's like, I haven't really seen you without a bunch of like co-producers. Like, like the way that there's a bunch of, the generous way of saying it is it's a more collaborative process.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, the other way of looking at it is it's a lot of people getting points or whatever. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like I said, it's like getting easier and easier to like make music. And then like, you know, some people are finessers. That specific line though was for one person, kind of attacked me out of nowhere, and I'm just like, I never seen one credit from you without a co-producer. Like, go look me up, you know what I mean? Like, you trying to downplay what I do, and that's just all that was. But I understand, like, Quincy might not even touch the drums or keys on any Thriller songs.
Nah,
you know what I mean? But we still revere him and respect him, and we know his genius. We know that he contributed something that really mattered to that project, to be the producer on every song and to be the executive producer. But you got Greg filling games, you got the guy who is programming the drums and all that, but that don't make him anything less. So it's like, I'm not saying that it's not cool to work with other, you know, musicians. I do that. I got credits, you know, I'd be generous with letting my homies come in. And if I hear something, it's like, yo, add a part to this, maybe try some drums here. Like, you know, I'm still there conducting it though. You know what I mean? Like, if you give me some pieces, I don't really just let people just freely do their thing. Like, I kind of just like kind of still got it. And that's what the genius part is. So, you know, I understand that's part of the game.
Some of the younger, young artists, are you enticed by working with them?
No, for sure. I'll be down to like, you know,
Ice Spice, something. I'm like, man, I could hear her on some of your stuff. You know what I mean?
That's funny. Nah, it's crazy because before Munch, this before like, her like, you know, following Drake and Drake following her, all this, like, I literally DM'd her and she came to LA, and when she hit me up, like, I just was kind of just moving around, probably doing too much, and we wasn't able to link, and I was about to link her before the fame, before like the real pop off and shit. Like, I seen the vision, I knew it was coming.
Did you see it from off the Bust It Down challenge thing, or
this is way back, bro. I just seen like the way she looked, she had a look, and like, you know, she like just had some tour
before,
like, in the video.
Before the red fro and all that.
This is some time ago, like, you know what I mean? I just was like, I hit her up.
And I'm she
like,
I want to nice tap
in
you.
Gave her my number when she came out, we just never linked.
That's gotta happen, man.
Shit crazy, yeah.
That's gotta happen, because she would sound real nice on your beats, yeah, man.
For sure.
Man, well, thanks so much for being gracious with your time, man.
No, for sure.
And for all the music, man.
Appreciate y'all having me, man. It'll set up.
Before you go, I gotta add, well, because it's important, man. How good Nas is sounding.
Word.
On your records.
Shout out to David Kim, our engineer. He mixed all four projects. My homeboy, he mixed a lot of other stuff. Mixed most of my music, but it's kind of like a perfect triangle offense, you know what I mean, between me, him, and Nas as far as sonics and getting, you know, everybody putting they all into what's going on. Like, David is going to go the extra mile to just make sure the music is pumping in, the vocal is just, like, sitting in the proper place.
Sitting perfect, man.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever people was hearing in the day where they felt like they couldn't lay their voice into your beats because it was too crowded, it's mm-hmm. like, whatever's going on now, man, it's, like, it's sonically perfect.
Yeah, nah, for sure. And that's what I'm working on. I just, like, want the music. I'm trying to get to that Thriller level where it's, like, just, like, going into your ears perfectly and just hitting the veins and the soul, you know
what
I mean?
That's what it does. And I'm telling you, like, having Nas at 30 years later,
yeah,
sounding better than he's ever sounded. That's like having Whitney 10 years ago
crazy.
Coming out with like her best record or something, you know? You got someone with an iconic voice sounding the best that they've ever sounded.
That's why I be telling Nas too. I'm like, bro, you could say ABC 123 on the beat and your voice is so cold that it's going to sound ill. So I'm like, the words and the way you putting it together, that's just like the mind-blowing shit.
Yeah, yeah, man. Well, much respect, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks to Hit-Boy for breaking down his production process and inspiration. You can hear all of our favorite Hit-Boy produced tracks on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, Nisha Venkut, Jordan McMillan, and Eric Sandler. Our editor is Sophie Crane. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription service that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for only $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to Musora.com, Musora.com, to start a new musical journey today. The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored among some of the most influential leaders in industry. And me, I'll be there too. Enter now at T-Mobile.com/unconventional awards. See you there.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.